So I'm going to begin by introducing the panelists that we have today. I'm Lisa Nishi, Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, and we have Rhonda Kitch, our University Registrar, and John Burdick, our Vice Provost for Enrollment, who will be our moderator, and Anne Lefebvre, who is part of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. She's the Senior Director of Student Services. Leslie Meyerhoff, who is the Director of Assessment and Planning from Student and Campus Life, and Ryan Sexton from the Hotel School. He's a registrar there. So I'm going to hand it over now to Rhonda, if you'd like to get us started.
Thank you, Lisa. I'd be happy to. We are delighted so many of you are here today, this evening, to share some time with us. Next slide, please. We have a lot of information we're eager to share with you. We want to provide an overview of what enrollment will be looking like. We want to be sure you're aware of the guide to fall enrollment highlights. We're not going to go through the entire guide. You can find a link to the guide off of the Office of the University Registrar website, and that link will be shared at the end of the presentation tonight. But we'll share some of those highlights to be sure that we've covered those details and that your questions are covered. We want to focus specifically on how to best plan for round one enrollment, talk about some resources, including some of the different tools and platforms you'll be using to plan for enrollment. How to enroll is a very important part of the process, so we look forward to walking you through that. And most importantly, we're excited to get to your questions at the very end and be able to discuss those as well. First of all, we want to walk through some of the different instruction modes. If you're a returning student, you may be familiar with some of the previous instruction modes, and note that there's some new ones. For first-year students, these could be all new to you, so it's important to have some understanding about what the description is and a bit of the definition in place. These are also included in the Guide to Fall Enrollment that I indicated is on the OUR website. So you'll find in-person courses. Those are courses delivered in-person, face-to-face. All required class meetings will be on campus, and very specifically, they will conclude prior to Thanksgiving. And so, for example, they might be a course that meets in the first half of the semester, perhaps the first 7 weeks of the semester. Then, probably most popularly, there are a number of courses that will be offered in-person with a transition to online. The course begins in person during those specific scheduled meeting times, but at Thanksgiving time, there's a transition to online instruction that continues through the remainder of the semester. Next, you could find hybrid, which includes online and in-person potentials. This really is typically a rotating or switch kind of instruction mode, that there will be in-person instruction mode during, again, those specific meeting times, but there'll be some sort of rotational attendance model, and you'll receive specific information from your instructor on what that could look like. So, for example, from the beginning of the term through just before Thanksgiving, if your course meets Monday, Wednesday, Friday, perhaps you come to class in person on Mondays, but attend online Wednesdays and Fridays. Again, those particular details would be shared with you from your instructor. Again, just similar to in-person with the transition to online, at Thanksgiving time, this instruction mode transitions and will meet exclusively online for the remainder of fall semester. Next, there are online courses. The course is delivered online. It's delivered synchronously during specific scheduled meeting times. This could be an option for students that are online and as well as the instructor, and it doesn't offer any in-person or in-person with transition to online or hybrid online and in-person options. There might be exclusively online options. Or it could be the online option for a student to be able to participate remotely while the class is going on campus from an in-person with transition to online, or hybrid online in-person pairing. So you might see examples in the roster that have in a course that has the instruction mode in-person with transition to online paired with an online section. They both have the same meeting time, and so the online section in that situation would be meeting and going through the course at the same time as the students that are physically on campus. Next, there are distance learning asynchronous opportunities. All students and instructors interact online. However, there is not a specific meeting time for the course. Finally, these haven't changed. We also have directed research and independent studies. And if you want specific information after that about those, I recommend reaching out to the specific instructor or your advisor. Now, depending on where you're coming to us from, depends on the type of instruction mode you can enroll in. So these are just quick at-a-glance charts in terms of what will be available in different instruction mode options for you. So if you're a student and you're enrolling from Ithaca, you will be in Ithaca for the fall semester. Every instruction mode is an option and available to you. For students transitioning to Ithaca, we know there could be a variety of reasons that travel plans may be a bit of a challenge right now, but if your ultimate goal is to be in Ithaca this fall semester, the columns and the chart on the right pertain to you, that you're in the midst of transitioning and you still have all of the instruction modes as an available option to you. But what is most important for you to keep in mind during the enrollment process is if you're looking for an in-person with transition to online, and hybrid online in-person course, you need to be sure to find the online pairing that will go with it. You will still, because we want to save a seat for you when you ultimately come to Ithaca, you still will enroll in that in-person with transition to online, and hybrid online in-person section, but we need that online pairing so you're able to access the course materials while you're in that transition to Ithaca. Finally, we know there's a number of students that will be enrolling from outside of Ithaca for the entire semester. And as it probably makes best sense, the various in-person instruction modes simply wouldn't be available to you, but you still have options related to online and distance learning asynchronous in particular that will be great options for you as you plan your course enrollment. Next up, there's a number of details that we've been working through in terms of how we've structured round one and round two enrollment. I think probably most frequent question in the last week or two has been, why is there a 6-credit cap in round one? And that's a wonderful question. We've struggled with this a lot as an implementation team, and we did have a prioritization that we wanted to be sure that students were able to enroll, if they so choose, in one in-person course in that first round. There, in addition, there are a number of 6-credit classes offered from around the university, and we wanted to be sure that if we set a lower limit, that would actually prevent students from enrolling in those important courses. We do understand that the 6-credit limit means that some students can only enroll in one class in round one, and others will be able to enroll perhaps in 2 classes in round one. We have to set it at a credit cap. It's not a course cap, so it's a credit cap. So if the credits you're looking at are at or equal to 6 or less, you are able to enroll in those courses. If you've placed more than that in your shopping cart, and we'll talk about the shopping cart in just a few minutes because I'm sure that's a new term for a number of you. If you place more than that in your shopping cart, you will actually have errors and need to go back and think through that part again. And so I highly recommend you think about that in terms of what some prioritization of courses are, and Anne will be talking about that more in just a few slides. The 6-credit course is going to be firmly enforced, and one thing to consider within those different rounds is it is very rapid, it's happening very quickly, but once we are through round two, we do roll into open enrollment, which begins on September 2nd. And so you still have the ability to add and drop your courses. And I'll talk about some of those important dates in just a few slides. And some colleges will automatically enroll you in your courses. That might be happening for some of you, and your college would be communicating that. If your college enrolls you, pre-enrolls you, for example, in a 3-credit course, you still could enroll in up to 6 credits. You could go search for and enroll in an additional 3 credit class. If your college has pre-enrolled you in 6 credits, you really wouldn't be eligible to participate and enroll in round 1, because the system will look at you've reached that 6 credit limit. You don't have additional credits that can be added during that round, and you will need to hang tight and wait until round 2. All right, Anne, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks, Rhonda. Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk about preparing for course enrollment and figuring out the courses you're going to take. So number one, preparation is key to this process. The more you prepare, the smoother this is going to go. And much of this advice will be specific to our new students, but returning students are having a new experience with this too. So returning students need to carefully plan their schedules with attention to credit limits and modality of instruction, as Rhonda's been starting to overview in this session. So I'd like to emphasize that I'm speaking on behalf of all the colleges at Cornell, and it's very important that you pay attention to the help and guidance that you receive from your college for the enrollment process. Each college approaches this slightly differently due to our various curriculums and requirements. And also, our professional graduate students may want to seek help from their support offices for specific questions they may have around this enrollment process. So my number one tip to get started on this process is to go back through your Cornell email, and I know you've got a lot of email over the last few weeks, but you should be looking for any information you might have received from the university registrar, your major, your college, or whatever program that you're part of, because I'm pretty sure you've received some very good information, because I know everyone is involved in helping you prepare for enrollment. So our advisors and registrar folks have really been trying hard to share information that you need for this process. And also make sure you're checking out information on our websites. Many colleges have some Canvas sites for the new students. Chatter, and there's just many resources, but I guarantee you, you've got some very good content to start with. So planning for round 1. So yes, keep in mind we have the 6 credit maximum during round 1, but you also kind of have to keep in mind your maximum number of credits for the semester. And so for our first year students, it is 18, and for our returning students, it's 22. So here's some important questions to ask. What courses should be in person? Which ones do you really want to be sure you can try to take in person? What courses do you need for your major? What are the courses you need for your college requirements? Do you need a freshman writing seminar? And this is very specific to our first year students, because the Writing Institute's recommending you have at least 5 courses identified and ready for enrollment. Okay, so those are just great questions to start thinking about, because it's going to help you create a little bit of a priority list and also start thinking about what your backup courses might be good to have as well. As you're doing this, start noticing the days and times of the courses so you can start making some considerations around what may or may not fit together. So this is kind of like putting together a puzzle, and you need to make all these pieces fit together. So next, there's that really handy thing called the scheduler. And I think Ryan's going to talk a little bit more about this. But you will need to use that tool to see if your courses start to fit together. So you can put your prioritized courses in the scheduler and then see if you have any overlaps. You'll also want to consider the mode, because if you have an online course and you're here in Ithaca, can you make it to your next course if it's in person? So, and vice versa. So this is just a chance to get a glance at these priority courses and how your schedule might start looking. And so again, you're kind of moving, I think of it kind of like a funnel. You're starting kind of with these big questions and trying to narrow down what you need to do. So once it appears you have a possible viable schedule, move your priority classes into the shopping cart for round 1. So this would be your 6 credits or less. And this will allow you to have these courses ready for your enrollment period once it opens. If the courses you've identified are not available once you begin enrollment, that's when you're going to turn to your backup plan to see what courses you also want to take and if they're available. This could become frustrating depending on the popularity of a course, but don't get discouraged. It may not be exactly what you plan to be taking this semester, but if you're able to take requirements and get them met, you're still making great progress towards your degree. And you may want to flag these courses to try to take them another semester when you may have more priority in the enrollment process based on your year. Keep in mind, round two is where you're going to be able to add the rest of your courses. So there will be some fluctuation and shifting around enrollment, and that happens around the add drop period. So that's where you can make some adjustments to your schedule as other students kind of drop or add courses. That will give you some freedom to maybe relook at your schedule and see if some of those courses you wanted is you can get them now. So the enrollment period, the add drop period, will start the day after the end of the official enrollment. So it kind of flows from one right into the other this year. So that's a little different for our continuing students. Also, I just want to note some colleges are offering some advising seminars to their new students, and they have specific recommendations on when you want to add those seminars, whether it's during phase one or phase two. You should really, again, check all the emails and the information you've received. You've probably been given guidance on this, but you may want to check directly with your college if you have questions about that. A lot of this information could be very specific to your college or major. So check that email. I think there's going to be some challenges with these credit limits and meeting graduation requirements for our seniors. If you're a senior with conflicts or maximum credit challenges, you should be in touch with your college to determine the next steps for your situation. So my advice is use your time over the next few days. Our new students have a couple more days to really make that plan, pull together all that information that's available from your college, your major, and explore the courses to see what fits your schedule. Load them up in the shopping cart and just be ready for enrollment to go live. Your college advising offices and registrars are available this week to help if you need it. So please reach out. So I think that's what I wanted to share for some overall advice to getting yourself worked through that process and ready to enroll. So thank you and good luck with that process. And Ryan, my colleague, will now take over to talk a little bit more about the details of enrollment.
Thank you, Anne, and good evening, everyone. My name is Ryan Sexton. I'm the registrar for the hotel school. And for the next couple minutes here, I want to go over some tools that you have available to you to start developing your schedule. Now, it's important to note that some colleges pre-enroll their freshmen and sometimes sophomores into courses on their behalf. So it's important that you check your schedule over the next couple of days. I know for the hotel school, we just enrolled most of our freshmen and sophomores into their core block that is only available to majors. So you actually may have some courses on your schedule now. On the next slide, there are going to be three tools we're going to be reviewing. The class roster is personally my go-to when I'm looking up classes, and we'll talk about why that may be a good idea to start with. But then it's complemented with the scheduler. So this would allow you to start placing courses in this grid so that you can potentially find time conflicts that you may run into or overlaps, or making sure that you build in some own personal wellness time for yourself. So if you know that you're going to be doing some virtual yoga, you can actually go ahead and program that in to make sure it's not conflicting with classes you're looking for. And then lastly, the Student Center, regardless of which route you go, is where you'll end. The Student Center is where you're actually going to be performing the enrollment of your classes. So I'm actually going to go ahead and demo the class roster. So I'm going to share my screen here. All right. And for my panelists, can you see the registrar's main landing page? Just want to make sure I'm sharing the right screen.
Yep, we can see.
Okay, thank you. So this is something that you should favorite and put in your browser or your smartphone or whatever you may have, because this has important information about exams, the academic calendar, classes and enrollment transcripts, when you get ready for graduation, all that fun stuff. But I recommend clicking on classes and enrollment. Okay, there's some how-to documents here that I'll show you in just a second, but I do recommend that you go ahead and click on the class roster. The class roster is really good to explore classes that are available to you, particularly if you're looking for elective requirements outside of your core classes required for your major. So if you have distribution requirements where you need some natural sciences or social sciences, this is a really good way to see, you know, what is astronomy offering? You know, we have some good areas here in Ithaca where you don't have a lot of light clutter. So if you're into astronomy, you know, there are some good ways that you can go out there and start looking at various classes to kind of scratch that itch for you. But if you know the classes you're looking for, you can type in, for example, if your academic advising office or your registrar has sent you an outline of a degree progression, you know you have to take a certain course in your first year. So I'm just going to type in one of our courses, a finance course. It's going to pull up what is currently available. And you can also click View Course Details to view the courses of study description, any prerequisites, any enrollment limitations, if it's a forbidden overlap. So for those of you that are new, this is a fun little thing here at Cornell. We do have some classes that do have similar content, but they are specialized for your program. So for example, if you took this finance course, you would not be able to receive credit for both this and the Dyson course and so forth, or the Johnson course. So these are really good things to look at and to know as you're looking for courses. And this is a really good example of a hybrid course. So this course is gonna have two sections. It's gonna be hybrid and in person. And then it also has its mirrored online section. So as you can see, 8 o'clock to 9:55 a.m., 8 o'clock to 9:55 a.m. So this online section is zooming in live for that in-class meeting here. And then also for those students who are doing the hybrid where group A is gonna come on Tuesday and group B is gonna come on Thursday, they'll still be able to zoom in during this time. Now it's very important that whenever you're searching for classes that you are paying attention to this class number. If you are ever talking to a registrar, this is the number we need. So as you can see, there are multiple sections of this course. So if you were to email me asking for help in enrollment into one of these courses and you just say HADM 2220, my email back to you is, which section are you looking at? There are multiple sections and the class number is to the specific section. That way I know that you're trying to get into this 8 a.m. course in-person hybrid or you're trying to get into this 8 a.m. course online meeting. So what some students can do is they can go through here and write down their class numbers that they'll use in their student center to enroll, or they can come back here to the scheduler and start putting it in as well. So if you come to the scheduler, it's blank right now, and you do have to log in. So it's currently logged in as me. My view will be a little bit different than yours since y'all are students, but I can do HADM 2220. And sorry, I'm being selfish with my own courses, but it will look at any course that's on the roster. And as you notice, there are four sections here. So as you click on the sections, it will then move it around on here. But once again, it doesn't really give you everything that you need to know because once again, you need that class number. That class number is what you're gonna take to the student center to enroll. If we click on course details, it will open up that expanded view that we saw on the roster earlier. So you can come here and then once again, write this down. This is important to note that this does not feed into your student center. This is great to look at in order to get an idea of your schedule. But once you have your schedule completed on here, do not close this and walk away and think that you're enrolled. You still have one more step to go. I've run into this a few times with a few students and it is a little confusing. This is just a planning tool. You're gonna be once again, writing down these numbers here that are specific to the section that you want when you go into Student Center. And the reason why I'm saying write it down is because that will expedite the process when you're in Student Center. You will have the ability to search for classes in there and add them to your shopping cart. It's just a little bit more cumbersome. It doesn't really use the prefix of the course. So you would have to know which department or college the course is that you're looking for, which you can, of course, come back to the class roster and it will help tell you where that's at with these wonderful very long list here. Cornell offers a lot of courses, as you can see, in a lot of disciplines. And before we jump back over to the presentations, which we'll do in just a minute, I'm going to be pointing out some important blocks in Student Center. And one of them is going to be the enrollment tab. And I took a little snip of an enrollment tab from one of our incoming freshmen. And as you can see, during round one, it's telling you 6 credits. So this is round one for a freshman because it's August 27th. But once we get into that regular session, look at that, it goes up to 18. 18 credit hours is the maximum by default for the hotel school, but we do allow up to 21 credit hours based on an established cumulative GPA. Now, the maximum credits available to each college is different. For example, I believe arts is 22 credits after their first year. So this will be specific to your college and school. But once again, the 6 credits here are gonna be the minimum for everyone in the beginning. So if you're already enrolled in 6 credits or more, guess what? You get to sleep in and you don't have to worry about round one enrollment, but you will join in on round two. And so with that, let's go ahead and jump back into the presentation. And I will stop share. All right, and so if we go to the next slide, we might go through these a little quickly. So once again, this is showing the course roster. Oh, actually, sorry, no, let me go back. I want to show you how to use the filters. The filters are important. So I'm going to share my screen one more time. Sorry about that. I knew I was forgetting something. So let's say you know that you need a in-person course. I'm going to move the panelist over here. So you can use these filters over here to really, really streamline what it is that you're looking for. If you know you're looking for Monday, Tuesday courses, you can select that. Location, most of these are going to be Ithaca campus for the most part. But then let's say you're looking for in-person, like you know you have to have at least one in-person course. So what you could do is you click on in-person, and then if you hit search, it would show you everything that's available, but I'm just going to use, so it doesn't bog down the system too much. I'm just going to look at the HAD and prefix courses. So these are the prefixes for my school, and I've put in the in-person, so these are all of the courses that are offered in person. We have more hybrid and online because we typically have a little bit larger class sizes in our entry-level courses. But if you're looking specifically for online, you can also do that as well. Let's say you, and this is more for the future, you know that you really like a faculty member and you want to see what they're offering. When you're in the roster, you can hover over the faculty member's name, and that's their NetID. That would allow you to actually look up the instructor and see what courses they're offering. So this is really important when you start to get ready for those electives and you want to find some electives in the area of interest of faculty that you're teaching. But really, I mean, the sky's the limit on if you want to look at specific times, credits, class levels, subjects. So there's really a lot of filtering that you can do. So that was kind of an important part. I didn't want to miss that, but I will go ahead and stop sharing now and jump back in to the PowerPoint. All right, and then next slide. So yep, this was a cue to let you know that you have all of those filters there to really help refine your search. We'll go on to the next slide. So once again, this is just kind of demoing how the schedule works. So you can actually save multiple schedules as you define what it is that is gonna work better for you. Courses you're enrolled in, it can pull from, but once again, it does not write back to the Student Center. You're gonna have to go back in there. I'm gonna show you how to do that in just a minute. And we'll go ahead and move to the next one. All right, here's the Student Center. This is how you interact with the university in terms of your enrollment, but not only that, you can also look at your financial aid award package if you have one, your bursar's bill, all that good stuff, request a transcript. Basically, if you've been enrolled in any classes, you'll see it right here where it says you are not enrolled in any classes. So if you've been block enrolled already, for some of our students, you'll already see some classes there. But notice on the right-hand side here, holds. If you have an enrollment hold there, that means you still have not finished something in your checklist. Please go in and check that. There may be other things there as well. So by simply clicking on the hold that appears there, you'll notice it's a blue hyperlink. It will give you more information and contact information should you need it. Your to-do list is just a to-do list. It's friendly reminders, milestones. But then right here in that enrollment dates, most of you should see something populated right there. So when you click there, you remember how I showed you 6 credits and then it jumped to 18? So that's how you can see the credit limit set by your college or school. It should populate there based on date range. But let's say we've already done all of our searching. We know what classes we need to enroll in because we have written down those class numbers, or we've gone ahead and developed a schedule in the scheduler, but we have those class numbers available. We'd actually go ahead and click on the plan tab. And so that should be on the next, or you can click on the enrollment shopping cart as well, but plan will also get you here. So that 4 or 5 digit number typically is what you'd put in here. So for section 1 of finance, I knew that's what I wanted to take. I put in the 5 digit number in this case, and then I'd hit enter and it would add it to my shopping cart. But let's say I didn't do that. Let's say I don't want to use any of those other things. I just want to do everything in the student center, right? One-stop shop. You could actually just click search. It is a little more cumbersome, but it will allow you to search the class roster. But it's, like I said, it's not quite as user-friendly. So I would recommend going through the roster first. If we go ahead and click next to the next slide. So we went ahead and put that in. It is now in our shopping cart. You would see it here. Enrollment is not done yet. When classes go into your shopping cart, it's a plan. So sometimes students will add multiple sections of a class knowing that a section may fill up, but they want to go ahead and have both sections in there in the event their primary one is filled, but they're ready for their secondary selection. You'd go ahead and select next to add the one that you want to your shopping cart by that yellow arrow, which will then bring us to our next slide. It's showing that everything is open. So it's also making sure that as you're going through this process, it's doing some verifications as well. So this is a really great example of a course with multiple components. A lot of the students in the STEM disciplines will definitely have a lot of labs or discussions, but then even in the liberal arts and the business programs, we oftentimes have discussions or even labs as well. So if there's an additional component, it will require you to select it. So for example, this discussion was connected to this lecture. So it's making sure that the class enrollment is complete. It will give you an error message if you're trying to progress without selecting a component that's required. Also, I want to point right here the grading basis. Here at Cornell, we like to provide students the ability to explore other disciplines without potentially risking their GPA. Not every course is offered as student option grading, but if it is, you'll select a grade modality here. GRV means that you are taking it for a letter grade. SUV means that you'll be taking it as satisfactory or non-satisfactory. A satisfactory functions just the same as a pass there and you'll get credit for the class, but it does not award GPA units. If you end up getting a U, which is unsatisfactory, still does not affect your GPA, but you will not receive credits for the units towards degree completion. Then down here, verifying the time and location, and then you click next. All right, so now it's in our shopping cart. I know there's a lot of clicks in there, but it's just wanting you to verify along the way. So if we know that this is a class that we're ready to enroll in and it's 9 a.m., 6 a.m., whatever your window is open, you're gonna wanna click on this little check box here, but you can still continue where this yellow arrow is showing to still put in those class numbers. So if you wanna start going ahead and putting a few more classes in there, you can. Keep in mind, you're only going to be able to enroll in 6 credit hours or you're going to get an error message. So let's say I just want to go ahead and enroll in this biology course. Go ahead and click on the little select here, and then we'll click on the enroll, which I believe should take us to the next slide. Oh, yep. Click on the enroll from there. So here is an example of 2 classes. But let's say I want to save this one for later. Okay, the plant biology course. I want to make sure I get into this one. This is my goal for the round 1. I'd hit the check mark there and then hit enroll. And then that should take us to the next slide. Oh, actually go back one more, sorry about that. Basically, once you hit enroll, 2 things are gonna happen. And ideally, you're gonna get green check marks that say success. Now, if you get a red X, the red X is important to read the error message. You may get several error messages. One error message may say unable to process, you do not meet the requirements. So for example, that finance course I was showing you is only open to hotel students. We do have a non-hotel finance course that non-hotel students can enroll. So that could be one of them. Another one could be a prerequisite error. Prerequisite error means that you do not have the prerequisites. So for example, intro to accounting is a prerequisite to finance. If you don't have finance, you'd get a prerequisite error. So it's saying you must go back and enroll in the prerequisite course. The other error that you may get is either requires consent of the instructor or consent of the department. So this means the faculty member is managing the enrollment for their course. So you'll want to reach out to the instructor or the department in the event that you get one of those error messages. So if you're wondering, how do I contact the instructor? Remember, back on that roster, if you put your cursor over the instructor's name, the faculty member's name, you'll get their NET ID. So all you do is add @cornell.edu after it, and boom, there you go. You're able to get right in touch with that faculty member. That should really be the errors that you, the most common errors that you get. The other one's a time conflict override. I'll talk about our time conflict error, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But your ultimate goal is make sure that when you're going through this process, you're clicking on the enroll button, and you're making sure that you get green check marks. If you're not getting green check marks that say success, the enrollment was not completed. So be careful with that. So that's always a good time if you're not aware of what's happening there. You can reach out to the registrars in your college to get kind of more info. But remember, you want to include the class prefix, number, and the class number, because that's how we can expedite troubleshooting. We're getting hundreds and hundreds of emails right now, so it will help expedite and resolve your situation quicker if you're including that information in your initial email to us. The last thing I want to talk about a little bit was time conflicts and possible time conflict overrides. This will vary based on college, but there will be absolutely no time conflict overrides for courses that would be in person or hybrid. So you cannot have a time conflict override for course one that's in person and then course two that's hybrid. Okay, they're in very short demand or very high demand, short supply. And we need to make sure that a student who's enrolling these courses has the seat and will be there for the entire time, because that could potentially be blocking out someone else. Where some flexibility comes in is overrides between online sections. It will vary by college. Just from the hotel's perspective, we are typically allowing, if there's a time conflict override needed that is between two online courses and it's 25, 15, 5 minutes, you know, we can help you with that. But in order to do that, consent has to be granted by both faculty members. So you would have to supply an email from faculty member one and an email from faculty member two that consent to the fact that you have a time conflict between those courses. Even though they're online, if they are within 8 a.m. to about 9:30 p.m., we're still expecting students to log in and participate via Zoom, just as if it was a normal lecture. So we're still wanting to facilitate that classroom environment. But for students, again, from the hotel perspective, we will not allow complete overlap. So if a class is offered from 8 to 9 and then another student wants to take a class from 8 to 9 and they're both on Tuesday, Thursday online, that's not something that we would approve. Once again, we're looking for very few or very little time conflict. Like I said, about 25 minutes or less. But again, this does vary by college because each discipline is different and faculty members have different expectations. But no college will process a time conflict override without the consent of the faculty members teaching the course, because it impacts them just as much as it impacts the students. But that would be facilitated through a registrar's office. But the advising office is always a great place to start if you don't know where to go or who to start with. The advisors and registrars work very closely together. We're a team. We're in constant communication with each other and the departments. And we are definitely here to help make this as painless as possible, but please bear with us. Like I said, we are getting hundreds of emails and we do want to make sure that we can resolve your questions and answer your questions in a timely manner. So I think that's about it for my end.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Thank you so much, Ryan. Very helpful information. I feel like that's a pop quiz in best how to prep for the next couple days and thinking about what are some of those common errors, where can be some helpful platforms to help guide along the way. And if I do need to reach out to my college registrar, I know the information I need to include. A few final things before we transition into a few questions. It's important for you to look for announcements from your instructor about seat assignments, attendance assignments for hybrid courses, any other very pertinent and important announcements that are for your particular coursework. So watch for those will be coming in the coming week. Information about prelims and semifinals will also be shared by instructors. That will be after start of classes. This year, you can't just drop into a class if you're looking to do some course shopping and you're looking at in-person hybrid, or in-person transition to online courses. You can't just simply drop into a class during that course shopping period. And that's really because of the requirements that we're all facing in terms of making sure we keep a safe environment for our learning and academics. So thinking about how to course shop, we will have additional details forthcoming on the Office of the University Registrar homepage. They will be posted shortly before the start of classes. And most importantly, don't forget your mask as you head out to classes, and be prepared to keep that with you at all times. I do want to make just a quick note, because I know there are so many questions related to the course roster and what's the status, are things still evolving, what does it look like? And so I do want to just share some information that the roster will continue to see some changes. There could be location updates. I know we have a number of those to still populate in the system. We might see some instruction mode and some enrollment cap updates. In some cases, because of ever-changing dynamics, we might even need to change the class time. We hope we can avoid that, but know that we're working in your best interest to be sure that these decisions are made for public health and safety reasons. We could see some time changes, like I said, and the start and end date, if you're seeing some unusual pieces there, it's based on information we've received from the department. Know that we are working feverishly to update information so it's just as perfect as it can be for you. So as Brian mentioned, we're all in this, we're here to help. And so if you have questions, that's where your college registrar, your advising office, or the Office of the University Registrar can help you out. So if you have specific questions, don't hesitate to ask.
And I'm going to jump right in and pick up where Rhonda's just left off. All the people you see here and many more have been working as hard as they can all summer in the post-COVID environment to make sure that it's possible for you to get registered and for you to take in-person classes in hybrid when that's part of your intent, and for seniors who are on here and graduate students who are in the final year of the program to complete their coursework and graduate. So all of that is the intent. And everything that we'll try to answer should be interpreted through that light. We're not gonna be able to get to every question. I do wanna characterize that some of the questions that are being asked are very appropriately directed to your college and to your specific advisor where you know one, or to your school. And that will be part of the advising process that proceeds over the next 5 or 6 days and probably into the first week of classes somewhat. So if your question is pretty specific to your specific course choices, we'll probably move past those for now and stick to those that are generally applicable to almost everybody here. I'm going to launch right into some of the questions that came up prior to this when we announced that we were doing this. And I'm going to mix it up a little bit because I know there's a lot of questions specifically about enrollment. I'm going to go to Lisa first because there's some pretty core questions that go to the heart of the activity we've undertaken to set up in-person enrollment, and Lisa has been in charge of that. Lisa, can I enroll in 2 online classes at the same time? Can I petition to do this? And what if they overlap by just 5 minutes?
So great question. So if one of the courses is an asynchronous course, that means there's no meeting time associated with it. So that is not a problem. But as Ryan said earlier, if there is a meeting time associated with both of your courses and they overlap, then that is going to create a conflict. And it really depends on the department and college and also the instructors of the 2 courses in question. And so you will need to get explicit permission in order to be able to get an override.
And Lisa, another general question that I think is interesting to a lot of people, especially those that are continuing at Cornell, know what happened this past spring. In-person versus online exams, is it fair that they could be offering the same exam in 2 different ways? And why are online courses going to have in-person exams? You can explain that.
Great question, a question we've gotten a lot. So the reason that we decided to have allow in-person exams for any type of course is that, you know, because of space restrictions, a lot of courses had to go online in the fall with 6-foot distancing. We can't fit classes that have enrollments, larger than 50 in a classroom. We're using the hybrid approach for some of that. But some instructors still feel quite strongly about being able to give an in-person exam. And we had some problems in the spring with academic integrity with online exams. So that's another reason. The expectation is that if you are here in Ithaca and your instructor of any course, regardless of instruction mode, decides to give an in-person prelim or semifinal, then you would be expected to take the exam in person. But this is not to say that all courses are going to give in-person exams. In fact, that's definitely not the case. For the students who are participating in the course online, it's really up to the faculty member to decide exactly how they are going to handle that. But I've heard faculty talk about, for example, giving the same exam at the same time online for students who are online. The 24-hour window that we had in the spring semester, that policy is no longer going to be in effect in the fall. So you can expect to have a timed exam online. Obviously, if students are in a time zone that are not amenable to the scheduled time, then the instructor would need to accommodate students and provide an alternate time. I've heard faculty talk about perhaps giving the online exam via Zoom as well, so that the exam can be proctored and also so that the instructional team can be there to answer any questions that students might have about the exam.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm going to jump to Leslie from Student Campus Life because there's a couple of questions that are pretty core to the student experience as part of being in Ithaca. Leslie, can you answer, when will students start getting notifications about daily checks?
Those notifications will start on the first day of classes.
And Leslie, another good question. Once we complete everything on the checklist, and we know that some thousands of students are not complete just yet, will we get notification?
Yes. On the checklist itself, it indicates that you've completed it, and you'll be able to see all green checks across the top of your checklist, or Some of you may see a gray NA on some of your tabs. NA means not applicable. And so if it's not applicable, you wouldn't have had to complete that one. Otherwise, you should have all green checks.
And a couple questions that I think I'll take about financial aid and our status there. About 90% of the students eligible for financial aid who apply for financial aid have received an initial notice. There are some that are requesting a re-review based on appealing, might be circumstances have changed in 2020 for their family, unemployment, things that can make it harder to come up with the same amount of money as was anticipated when we did the first review or reviewed the information that arrived earlier. Just want to make sure every student understands that signing the Student Financial Responsibility Agreement, which has been a part of every new Cornell student's first arrival for a long, long time, doesn't keep you from pursuing more financial aid. You can continue to appeal, and while you have an appeal that's active, you're not being subject to any holds based on financing or unsettled bills, and you are not receiving any late charges. In general, if you've got concerns about being able to pay the bill that you're seeing, you can go to the bursar and request a review and explain your circumstances. Please don't let that stop you or let the financial responsibility agreement in some way make it harder for you to register and enroll. That's a pretty important step to take right now. And I just want to provide a little bit of reassurance here. The very first statement that was made by Cornell University about response to the economic dislocation after the pandemic started in March was President Pollack asserted that financial aid for students is our highest priority, or at least among our very highest priorities. So there's already been plans advanced for increasing financial aid for students that will need that. We will continue to evaluate and meet every student's need through the same mechanism that the continuing students have seen in the past. And if there is, and this is sort of normal business, if there is a reason that a student needs to leave before the semester is over, especially early in the semester, both financial aid and your charges will be adjusted. This has always been true. In fact, Cornell has a relatively generous policy of you're not actually fully completed in your payment obligations until after the first half of the semester is concluded, 60% of the way through. So please hang in there. Financial aid is late this summer, as all things are, because COVID has created a delay. But please contact the financial aid office. I know the hold times are a bit busy right now, but we do want to talk to you, and we do want to make sure that you've got the aid you need to be able to go. So I hope that'll provide some reassurance. If you're questioning about whether or not you should register, I think the answer is absolutely yes. At the very least, you're not being charged anything until after classes have begun. So if you have the opportunity to register, please do that. Sort of an associated question then, because there are circumstances that might lead a student even in this semester to need to take a leave of absence. I wonder if I could ask Anne to describe that process. If a student has to take a leave unexpectedly for any reason, how do they go about doing that?
Sure, there's definitely a couple types of leaves that students may encounter. There's certainly the health leave, and that's something you would work directly with Cornell Health if there's a reason that, you know, something has happened that's prohibiting you from finishing the semester. And then of course, this year, we've also heard from students that have maybe decided to not attend Cornell this semester, or maybe even for the year because of what's happening. And that would be a voluntary leave of absence. And that is available for you to start that process is on the University Registrar's website. And so we work very closely, the colleges work closely with the students through either of those processes along with Cornell Health. So there's very clear guidelines and help for that process. But your college advising office is a great place to start if you have questions about either leave that a student may need.
Thank you, Anne. And I'm going to throw this next question to Lisa. It's a question that has appeared a few times in the chat, and we knew it would probably be a question. Can you talk a little bit about the course enrollment caps? Where do we find them, and how do we respond to them? What does that tell us about our process tomorrow and beyond?
Well, I'm probably going to bounce this to Rhonda, but I will answer one question that we got, or I think a few people asked, why are there enrollment caps for online or asynchronous courses if there are no space restrictions? And to that, I'll say there are two reasons. Pedagogical reasons, so, you know, a discussion-based course, for example, becomes more difficult to manage the larger that it get, the larger it is, whether it's in person or online. And then the second is the fact that, you know, it's still more students for the instructor to be, whose work the instructor needs to grade and that they need to meet with. So it's not an infinite number that we can't increase the enrollment cap like that. So that's the answer for that. And Rhonda, do you want to say something about the enrollment caps and where they'll appear?
So actually, I'll jump in if that's okay. Great. I kind of live in the enrollment caps area because I help set them for our courses. So yeah, Lisa, you're very correct in that, you know, just because an online course technically can have unlimited capacity, courses are set up with a set number of students in mind, not to mention the time needed for grading and everything like that. And also ensuring that there are enough TAs for the course to support the course. So when a student is in the student center and they're searching for those courses, you'll oftentimes see lots of areas that are blue hyperlinks. So as you're kind of going through and verifying that, yeah, the class times are good and everything like that, you can actually click on it and it can show you how many seats are available in that course. I would caution that, however, sometimes classes are put into a classroom that are a little bit larger because maybe they need group work. And really in this case with the COVID, you know, our auditorium in Statler Hall used to be able to hold 700 students, and at max it can hold now is around 50. So I would be careful about looking at the number of students in the class versus the actual class size or class capacity. A great indicator to look at is whenever you're looking at the roster, you'll see three symbols. You'll see a green circle showing the class is open and is able to accept more students. Second, you'll see a red square. A red square means the class is full, and there is not an online wait list that you can add yourself to, meaning that it is first come, first serve. So if it changes back to a green circle, you could potentially then get into the course then. And then lastly, this doesn't apply to all courses. We're working on this technology to make it apply to all courses, but some courses do offer an online wait list that you can add yourself to. If this course offers an online waitlist, it will appear as a yellow triangle. And at that point, when you're adding the course to your shopping cart, there's a very tiny and easy to miss checkbox that says add to waitlist if course is full. You'll need to check that box in order to add the class or add yourself onto the waitlist. Otherwise, you'll get an error message that says class is full. If that's the case, just go back into your shopping cart, click on the blue hyperlink that is the prefix and number of the course, and then in the upper right-hand corner, you'll find that little box that will allow you to add yourself to the waitlist. Additionally, below that checkbox, I know I'm giving a lot, but once y'all are in there, you'll see it. Some administrative assistants or faculty will give you a permission number to enroll into the course. This number is typically 6 digits long, and you'll put that number in that box and then finish enrolling. And that way you could potentially bypass a prerequisite, a full class, whatever it may be. There are a few classes that do enrollment by permission number. So just pay attention to that. If a faculty member or admin assistant sends you a number, that's where you'll put it.
Thank you, Ryan. I think I'll ask this question for Anne, and Anne can speak to the experience in PALS and maybe speculate about elsewhere. For people that do not have an advisor or do not know who their advisor is, how would you recommend they go about reconciling that?
Yeah, sure. So again, that can vary a little bit across colleges. So some colleges have a little slightly different advising system than others. I do know in CALS, for example, we have a faculty advisor system, but I've also heard there's been a little bit of a delay in some of the assigning of advisors. So that could be happening elsewhere across campus. My advice is to contact your college advising office to inquire about what the system might be and who your most available advisor might be around any questions for your major. So it could be in flux. There's still things happening.
And then there's a bunch of questions that I hope I can pitch to Rhonda or perhaps to Ryan. It's sort of about strategy. If students, either because they were grad students who went through pre-enrollment in April, or they're students who are being pre-assigned into courses, as Ryan described for hotel students in first year, what kind of options do they have if they want to either go through a drop and add period, or if they want to sort of start from a drop and add period and prioritize other courses rather than the ones into which they've been assigned or the ones they enrolled in earlier? And I'm not sure whether that's more of a Rhonda or a Ryan question.
Thanks, John. It's actually probably a little bit of both. So in thinking about that prioritization, as I mentioned, striving to not put more than 6 credits worth of courses into your shopping cart for that first round is very important. If after that first round, you have the green check marks, that's the success marker, then going in and adding the courses back into your shopping cart for the next round, I think that's a wonderful way to success. The pre-enroll piece, whether it was in the spring, I know some colleges are doing some pre-enroll through bulk enrollment processes, that varies so greatly. And so I know for some students, they're enrolled in perhaps 3 credits or 4 credits, or perhaps it's 12 credits. And so that really is part of, I can't give a cookie cutter answer, unfortunately, just because of that variance. But certainly students, as we talked about getting into open enrollment or drop add, you might hear it referred to as, that opens, and specific details on that are also within the guide to student enrollment. If you look on the OUR website, which I'll show you a slide, actually, could you slide to the next screen, please, advance one. The specific websites here are various support websites to help from an advising standpoint, particular to your college. Details specifically about your college registrar and how you can connect with them, reaching out to the Office of the University Registrar. And then we also included a link to some Student Center help pages to help you navigate through some of that. This recording certainly will be a good aid to have on the side. But I do recommend that students think about the strategy in terms of rolling into drop add and how they can adjust their courses if needed. But again, I strongly recommend connecting with an advisor as you have questions about your curricular requirements and how you can ensure you're on the right path for your academic journey in leading to success for this upcoming academic year.
And I'll just jump.
Oops. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to caution, since there are some graduate students and potentially some undergrads based on block enrollment, that they're over the 6 credit hours, I would really caution you against dropping below 6 credit hours to change your schedule, particularly if they are major core classes, as they typically are prerequisites for what you're going to need to take in future semesters. So at that point, you may want to wait to round two, because for example, with our grad students, our professional master's students, if you're in 9+ credits, you're going to have to drop down below 6 credit hours before you can make any changes. So that means you could potentially be losing 2 or more classes that could fill up while you wait for round two.
Perfect. Thank you, Rhonda and Ryan both. A question I think I'd like to direct towards Leslie. It's there's several students who have described that they may be in Ithaca, but almost all or all of their courses will be online. I think they have questions about what their life will be like in that circumstance. An example of that is what kind of health checks they're expected to go through. Will they have access to facilities they can normally request for activities? Could you talk a little bit about the experience for students in that circumstance?
Sure. So students who are in Ithaca will all, undergraduate students will all have the same requirements for surveillance testing and for the daily check. And then we have other categories for professional and graduate students for the surveillance testing, but all students will be expected to do the daily check, whether they're taking in-person classes or not. And all Ithaca students will be expected to participate in surveillance testing. In terms of access to university facilities, you will have access to those facilities, and there also will be an option for you to sign up to use study space. Dining halls also, if you have a meal plan, you'll be able to use your meal plan in the dining halls. You'll need to reserve a table if you're planning to eat in, or you can do takeout in the dining halls.
Great. Quite a few questions about PE. I think maybe Lisa would be in a position to answer this about how those fit in with everything else. Are they in person, online, those kinds of questions?
Well, I don't have the list in front of me, but I do know that there are a number of PE courses being offered this fall, and you can take, some are being offered virtually and some in person. They are a great, thing for you to consider for well-being and to be able to get out. And so we highly recommend that you take a look at their offerings. There are quite a few.
Great. There's a question here that might be right for Anne or Ryan to answer. A student saying that their information from their college was that the pre-enrolled classes do not count toward round one, and they heard here that they do. So who is right, and thank you.
Wow. Yeah, go ahead. I have heard a couple things, so I'm interested in what Rhonda has to say.
So I think it just shows there are so many questions, and we're all working through this together. So if you are enrolled already, or in some instances, some of you may be enrolled through the night. I know OUR is working to get some of those upload files done yet this evening and tonight. If you are enrolled in any courses, by the time you start round one, those credits count towards your enrollment cap in round one. So whether I'm pre-enrolled in 1 credit or up to 6 credits or even 9 credits, those credits count towards my enrollment cap. So if I'm pre-enrolled in a 3-credit course, I can find 1 additional 3-credit course in round one, and then I'd need to wait until round two for my maximum enrollment caps. If I'm enrolled in 9 credits as I head into round one, like Ryan said, I get to sleep in, and then I'll be ready to go for round two. I hope that helps.
Kind of a similar question. Can I go through drop and add in between the two rounds?
I think the question would be, after the window closes, could they still potentially drop a class before round two starts? Yep. And I would say no, based on how I know PeopleSoft.
I would agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody asked if we can please discuss the SU option. Under what circumstances, this is probably for Lisa, in what circumstances would that possibly be a good idea, and how does that work?
So we have reverted back to our regular grading practices, which just means that it's up to the faculty member, instructor of the course, to decide what grading options are available for the course. And so it won't be the same as the spring, where we moved to a system where the SU option was available in all courses. And you should know that this is consistent with what universities are doing across the nation, that is to go back to a system where students can earn grades. And that there was a, you know, when we talked a lot about this, and I know students care a lot about this, but when applying to grad school, if peers from other institutions are taking all their courses for grades and students here at Cornell were not, the strong feeling is that it would disadvantage students who are applying to graduate school. It doesn't mean that the SU option might not be you know, available, and in some courses it absolutely is. It's just that grades are required for certain, to meet certain requirements in across departments and majors. Did that answer your question, John?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does. I've got a question that I think I'm gonna answer. It's from someone who might be coming from abroad, would be potentially a guest, or even an international student who's still waiting for visa appointments. If I go back to Ithaca in October, do I need to report that to the school, even if I still prefer to take all my classes online this fall? Couple answer to that. Yes, if you're coming back to Ithaca later than the start of the semester on September 2nd, for most of the people on this Zoom, number one, yes, please absolutely do let us know that you're coming back to Ithaca. That's mandatory. We do need to bring you under the surveillance testing, and you do need to do arrival testing. You do need to make your travel plans with New York State, and you do need, in some cases, to isolate and quarantine on arrival. So none of that changes, even with a late arrival. And also, if you are thinking about coming back and you'd like to be back in Ithaca for either for classes in person that you might still have a chance to access, or to take online classes, but to be here, please plan for that to be no later than October the 5th. That's a date we've determined that for international students specifically helps keep us in compliance, that those students are in fact taking some hybrid and in-person courses. You need to make sure that it's possible for you to do that while living in the United States. And even for students in the US who are delayed or for some other reason are unable to come late, we do want you to come as early as you can. We need to make sure we've got a sort of a settled residential population from the, well, as early as we can in September, all the way through Thanksgiving, because that's the best way to minimize the health risk.
John, can I add one thing?
Yeah, please add to that.
So there have been a lot of questions about how to complete the checklist, if that's gonna happen, because it's confusing. So what you will need to do is, on the first step of the checklist, be sure that you indicate that you will be in Ithaca, because that is your plan for the future. That way you'll be able to register for in-person classes if you choose to, and you'll be able to get a seat. So we'll be holding that seat for you. But if you start the checklist by saying that you'll be out of Ithaca, you won't be able to register for those courses.
Lots of questions here about is there sort of an infinite scale for online classes? And I know that that's a big point of discussion for Lisa and her group going all the way back to the spring term. So Lisa, do you want to talk about what scale means in an online environment, and maybe some about how we're approaching that differently a bit for the fall than what we did in the spring?
Well, in terms of enrollment, do you mean enrollment?
Yeah, I think the questions, some of the questions are running to, why would maybe we not take the smaller classes in person, because the bigger classes are just going to be allowed to be as big as they can possibly be. And if that's not true, why not? How is that actually going to work?
Right. I mean, so classes aren't going to be as big as they, you know, typically I would say that course sizes are pretty similar to what they have been historically. Faculty members set the total enrollment cap for their course across the different instruction modes. So let's say I'm teaching a course and I cap it at 35, that'll be 35 total across the students who are in the classroom and students who participate online. And we're accounting for that, the actual size of the classroom that's been assigned to the faculty member. So really, really large classes are online unless they are just a little bit too big and can be cut into sections or groups and put into the hybrid format.
Thank you. Sort of a freebie for Rhonda. Will there be some sort of, it moved. If the Tableau says a different time for the class than the class roster, which one is accurate?
Wonderful question. At this point, the Tableau information has been removed from the site because it was becoming increasingly outdated. The roster is the point of contact that you'll want to use. That's the most accurate, up-to-date information. And as I mentioned, there are continued updates happening, but we're making those based on important updates that are coming from departments and based on updated social distance guidelines that are happening within the in-person class environments. And so we're continuing to update, but we're hoping by 6 a.m. tomorrow, there will be continued updates. For example, locations will be added over the weekend. But within that the roster is getting closer and closer to that final form. I will add though, I've worked in a registrar office for 17 years. I don't care what semester it is. I don't care pandemic or not pandemic. A roster is always always evolving. It's always a living document because there are updates that come along the way. Things happen, things change. And so yes, we have some extra stressors that are among all of us right now, but the roster updates happen even in the most perfect of times. So your patience is so greatly appreciated, but the roster is the point of contact that you need to be looking at right now. And that is a link off of the Office of the University Registrar website.
And Rhonda, is the roster still updating twice a day, once in the afternoon and once in the evening?
Oh, that's a wonderful question, Ryan. there are times that the roster has been updated about every 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. So it does require that OUR does a push to update that information. But I will tell you this, if we're making just a couple changes, no, we're not making that update on every couple hour basis. If we're making some pretty significant changes, we are putting a push out within every couple hours. So that will start slowing down now with enrollment beginning, but I expect even through the next few hours, you'll see continued tweaks that move it closer and closer to where we want it to be. And that's really been the process through this all. We want it to be accurate. We want it to be a smooth enrollment process for everyone. We just ran out of time. That it's not to the perfection point that we would like it to be, but we know with your patience and working with your advising staff, your college registrar, and the Office of the University Registrar, we'll get through the next week. We're so excited to see you all, whether that's we see you in person or we see you online next week. We're excited to launch the fall semester.
Yeah, we should probably start wrapping up soon. I realize that we've gone over, but I just I wanted to say one thing for those of you who are moving into on-campus housing and have been assigned a move-in time slot that conflicts with your enrollment window. Don't panic. It's okay. You can prioritize your enrollment. There are a few ways you can think about doing this. If the conflict is on the day you're scheduled to arrive here for an arrival test, you might be able to arrive a little bit earlier, for example, for your arrival test, the COVID test, so that you are then available when enrollment starts. The windows for arrival testing are 8 to 12 and 1 to 4. The really important thing for you to just keep in mind is not to miss the arrival test, that is to not arrive, you know, after 4 o'clock on the day you're scheduled for that arrival test. If the conflict is on the day that you're scheduled to then move into the dorm, that is from the hotel to the dorm, that too is something that we can work around. And so you might be able to leave the hotel a little bit earlier or later, for example, in order to accommodate your enrollment time. And so staff in student campus life and move-in volunteers are aware of this. And so we just want you to know, no need to add more stress to enrollment. You can go ahead and focus on prioritizing that.
And I just want to say that there are a lot of questions we get to. Obviously, there will be answers coming over the next week in many cases, and in some cases farther into the semester. We will make sure that all of these questions guide us as we produce pages with frequently asked questions. So keep checking there. Check with your advisors and with your college in many cases. If there are really specific questions, we can get back to the specific person that asked. We will certainly do that as fast as we can, just as if you had asked over email or over the phone. Thank you all for your patience and your extra time. I hope we got to at least some of the questions that are most urgent for all of you. Good luck tomorrow for everybody registering, especially those of you doing this for the very first time or the very first time as a graduate student. We are, and it's been said, but I'll say it again, we're all in this together. Nothing is going to be perfect or easy. That's just not the way the virus is letting us do this. But with a goodwill and with a great deal of patience, we will get there, and people will be starting to take some really great Cornell classes and starting their experience on September 2nd. Thank you all for being here.
Bye-bye. Thank you.